Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Bills training camp day 10 in the books. Chris Brown joined by Bills general manager Brandon Bean. Brandon Bean's segment here on One Bills Live presented by Northtown. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Northtown, the official automotive dealer of the Buffalo Bills. So, are we tired of answering James Cook questions at this point?
You know what? It's always something, right? You can never just walk through and have a perfectly healthy team and everyone signed that wants to be signed and perfect weather every day. It's just the life of training camp.
Let me try to shape it differently, because I know you've talked about being in constant communication with his people. So would you call the level of dialogue relatively steady throughout, you know, the spring and summer? Or?
Well, I think there was dialogue, but when you're at the end of the day, I even said, once we kind of got all those guys signed in that draft class and Josh's deal, the draft is very important. So all eyes on that. And then,
I remember you saying that.
It's at that point we're kind of working on our draft guys. And so once we don't really get it done then, we're usually we're not going to really look at anything until we get to camp. And so that's kind of where it was. So there wasn't really much communication. There's been communication since we've been here. And as I said earlier this morning, this is my ninth season here. I've never had a player missing a practice over contract. So, I take personal responsibility for that. I don't like that. One of my jobs is to make sure I'm eliminating any distractions from our team and our organization. And so, unfortunately, that's where it's at from a decision that he and his camp, made the last couple of days. There's a day off. Hopefully soon we can, get some resolution one way or the other, whether that's a deal or whether that's, hey, there's no deal now, let's play it out and go from there.
Is this where being creative between the two parties can be helpful sometimes? Because I'm sure you guys have talked ad nauseum about the straight, hard, cold facts as they are, but maybe getting creative, maybe create a crack and an opening for common ground to be found.
Yeah, I mean, it's, every negotiation takes on its own life. And, I feel like here we've had a lot of success, with a lot of agents. And, unfortunately, I've never done a deal with this crew before. Mm-hmm. And so we're, still trying to fill that out. And I guess they would probably say the same. You'd have to ask them. But, it is what it is. I always say that it takes two to tango. And, when you do a deal, it's got to be right for the club and right for the player. And when you don't have a deal, that means it's not right for one or both.
And not just for 2025. I mean, you got to think beyond that, too, just as the general manager. You got a responsibility to your entire roster for 26, 27, and beyond, right?
Yeah, that's really – I mean, Kevin Megank does a great job, helping manage our cap and project. And we have a lot of sessions and meetings just – looking at our cap, looking at how people do contracts, who we would potentially restructure, who we would, depending on how they play this year, could have to have a pay reduction, or we do something to, you're constantly doing that.
Planning and replanning,
and things can change. Guys can perform above that, and guys can, you think you're not worried about, they hit the injury bug, or they're just not performing as well. There's so many things, but we're constantly having those dialogue. But you're exactly right. It's, people can say, well, you can do this and make it work in 25. That's fine. But every dollar less you take this year is adding on to those years. And so we have to work everything, obviously, around Josh Allen's contract. Yeah. And we always want to pay him all, especially our own. And there's no hard feelings with Jimbo at all. Love Jimbo. And sometimes you just have to agree to disagree and keep working on things.
Last season was the year of the wrist injury.
It was.
This training camp
has been mostly soft tissue.
Yep.
And, you know, we heard you kind of sensed it in Coach's voice because obviously he's got an agenda and stuff he has to get done in an allotted amount of time. And he's like, you could tell he's, we got a game in 5 days and we got to get ready. And I mean, the coaches even took steps to like back off. I know you saw like the first 2 days of 2 minute drills, they ran at half speed to take the pressure off the legs or whatever joints and not push guys in terms of the ones that were healthy. But then more guys were still getting hurt. So, I mean, the workarounds get pretty challenging here when the injury list gets this long.
Yeah, this has been tough. It's been a little bit of a domino effect, and you know, there's no finger pointing. We're all working together, and I think Sean and Bobby and Chris Tabor and Joe Brady have done a great job. You know, I've either been in part of some of those meetings or been on the outskirts, just cliff noting where we're at, what our plan is for practice, how we're going to do it. But they've been in constant communication with Nate, Joe Collins, and Will on where we're at, how we can get guys back. We're trying to get guys back, but the less you have at a position, the higher workload it is. So it's a balance because, to Sean's point, we've got a real game. I know it's a fake game, but we're playing another opponent. It's full speed. We can't in the third quarter ask the official to go 80%, you know, or do a walkthrough.
Got half speed here, guys.
Yeah,
two series.
We're not gonna be able to do that.
Yeah,
and so as the coach, that's a little unnerving for him, and so I feel for what he's having to deal with right now, managing all this. Yet also, he doesn't want to walk out there and watch us get our face smashed in.
Right,
and so there's a fine line to callousing your team without breaking your team, and unfortunately we just started behind them. You know, we had four guys out that had some things that happened over the summer, and that definitely did not help us to start there. And then you get a guy here or there, and now all of a sudden you're really thin at some positions. So we've been swimming upstream here, it feels like, almost since day three or four of camp, and we're trying to get out of it, but we're still in the middle of it right now, and we're just going to keep putting our heads together and work our way through this.
Yeah, and I know, you know, Tyler Bass has the pelvic soreness, and he hasn't been kicking in, you know, about a handful of days now. And I'm not making light of this at all, but Friday night, you know, at the Blue and Red, there's Ray Davis kicking some field goals.
Yeah.
So what do we think of Ray, and is he the odds-on favorite to be your emergency guy?
I would say put the Vegas odds on Ray. Ray Davis may have to, who knows, maybe he's got to kick a little bit on Saturday. We'll see where we're at. But I thought Ray did a good job. That was a cool opportunity for him. He stepped right up, and he did it. It's a you don't mind trying it, but you don't want that to become a norm.
Well, right.
And but so hopefully
– if you need somebody, you got somebody.
We got somebody.
Yeah,
we'll
that's
see
great.
How that goes.
Two receivers, one that has been here a while and has flat-out worked his tail off to get an opportunity, and another guy who's a newcomer, Wilkerson and Shavers. To some degree, Wilkerson has been the beneficiary of some of the injuries at the position, but you can't blame him for stepping up and taking advantage of it. For fans that really aren't familiar with Wilkerson, what can you kind of outline about his background? Because he's an older guy that's kind of bounced around the league, but maybe just paint the picture of him as a prospect and what kind of made him attractive to bringing him into camp here.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. We talk about the frustrations of injuries, but there is a positive, and some younger guys, some guys that we aren't as familiar with here that we've scouted through playing against them or whatever. He's played in New England and Vegas and some other spots. He's bounced around. He's had some spot duties, but he's played NFL varsity football, and he's come right in here. He's had no fear. He's picked up the playbook when we signed him in the spring, and he's been fun to watch. I think to your point, Shavers has, you know, for a couple of years has been one of the fan favorites and one of our favorites to push for that roster spot, and has been on our practice squad. But I think Wilkerson's had a heck of a camp, has gotten a decent amount of reps with the first group due to some of those injuries, and I don't see a guy that doesn't look like he doesn't belong.
Yeah, and he's put together too, and I know the importance that you guys put on receivers being able to block in the run game, and just looking at his physique, it looks like he can fill the bill there too. Another player that you and Sean know a lot longer than most of us, Shaq Thompson, and it's a shame he's out with the hamstring injury now, but I got to tell you, like, I've seen players come back from Achilles injuries before, and it's usually 12 months removed. This guy's 10 months out from Achilles surgery, and he was all over the place the first week of camp. I mean, he was really, you know, killing it. And I mean, the hamstring injury stinks. It's not a long-term thing, hopefully, but what can you say about the way he came in, made an impact? And he's not a spring chicken either. That's a major injury to come back from so soon. What were your thoughts on his ability? Maybe you're not surprised at all, knowing him like you do.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if he wasn't coming off the Achilles, it would have been an unbelievable get for us. Just the person, the DNA. You know, obviously, we spent a couple of years in Carolina with him. And then beyond that, the two guys he played with, Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis, like, yeah. He learned from two of the best. And, you know, I've always followed his career, always had a good personal relationship with him. He is Bill's DNA, like, through and through. And so to have an opportunity to get him here, the timing worked out. And, you know, to your point, man, I told him, like, Shaq, this is as physical as I've seen you. And I said, part of that's on me. We're in the AFC, you're in the NFC, so there's not a lot of cross tape.
Yeah, you don't see a lot.
You know, when he was on or the Panthers were on, I'd try and catch it. But, man, when he came out the first couple years we had him, he was so athletic. He was more that run and chase. And, you know, I think Thomas Davis's violence definitely rubbed off on him in a great way. He was one of our most physical players leading up into the red-blue scrimmage when he got the hamstring. You know, we've got a good plan together and hopefully get him back here sooner rather than later.
Because that's just valuable veteran to have just in the room alone, let alone on the field. Coach was pretty straightforward when the Hairston injury news came down, and, you know, everybody was like breathing a sigh of relief because, you know, it's a week-to-week injury, not a season ender, as I think some people were fearing. But he did say, look, the facts are the facts. He can't make up the time. He can't get back the time he's going to miss. But my question to you is, you had a similar situation last year with a rookie in Cole Bishop. Is there anything that the coaching staff can take from that experience and maybe apply differently this time around to have Max maybe even a little further ahead than where Cole was? Or is it just the fact of the matter is he's missing physical reps, it's just going to be very hard to make it up?
Yeah, I mean, I think our guys really did a good job last year of trying to get Cole as many walkthrough reps and things like that, but you just couldn't, you know, really get him out there. And then, you know, and then he plays a little bit and obviously, you know, got the start in the Houston game.
Yeah,
and
week five, right.
Didn't go perfect, but I say all the time, like, Terrell Bernard's first start against the Jets a few years ago didn't go perfect. Like, it's a lot to go from college defense to NFL, and a safety and a linebacker are going to have a lot on their plate. I would say the one positive, a corner's probably got a little less on his plate than a safety
That's a good point.
From that standpoint. But there's nothing you can do. I think at the point when our docs and trainers say he can at least get back into walkthroughs, you know, getting those reps, you know, at least if they're not at full speed, they are reps, and you can't, you know, those are the things you lose, and he's going to lose all these live reps, but we'll do everything we can to get him up to speed. Right now he's in meetings doing all that, but right. His main task is to spend time with our medical team and get, you know, get cleared.
And then the last one I've got for you, I think a lot of the focus this offseason, and understandably so, has been on the defensive side of the ball, all the additions you made both in free agency and the draft, and I get all that, and I understand, you know, people are focused on it, but I just feel like special teams has not been kind of covered or talked about enough, and getting Chris Tabor in here, a veteran special teams coordinator, which I think is the first time you've had a guy that's done it in the league previously at that level since 2018 when Danny Crossman was here. Can you just speak to, plus he's been doing research all last year. He's just watching the league and studying everybody. I just feel just watching him out on the practice field and talking to some people and the way he coaches that you're going to go into every game on Sunday with the chance to have a game day advantage in that phase of the game with this guy running the show for you. Do you feel similarly? Or?
Yeah, I would agree. You know, Tabes is, I knew who he was. We've worked with common friends around the league. You know, we've both been in the league, you know, a number of years. And so I'd heard really good things about him. Matter of fact, I remember his name came up all the way back when I was in Carolina with Rivera. I think they had crossed paths somewhere. But long story short, it's been great to work with him, you know, really spent some time with him in the draft process as he was kind of going through some prospects and we were looking at players. So really got to know him then. And then it was, you know, fun to see him in the spring kind of coach. But, you know, I see a guy that, you know, has the personality, the guys enjoy being around him, but he's not afraid to you know, jump him if he needs to be. And he brings a confidence to the group that I think will help this group. And we've tried to, you know, get his ideas on what he sees in certain players. Look at our players from a fresh lens. You don't have any bias. You don't have any partiality. Like, go watch the tape this spring and you know, even Turner West, you know, that he hired.
The assistant special teams coach, right.
Has been a good hire. And I like both those guys have been really working. And they had not worked together before. But I really like what they're doing. I'm excited. Obviously, we got to get out there and do it, and it's up to me to make sure we give them the right pieces, you know, each week to go out there and make an impact.
Awesome. Thanks for the time, as always, Brandon. Good to catch up with you here at training camp. We will take a break, but be back with more as Steve jumps back in the seat here. But that's GM Brandon
Steve Bean. Who?
Yeah, a lot of people say that. You're not the first person. Steve Tasker will be joining us when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Live from St. John Fisher for one more day this year. Training camp coverage brought to you by Fiegel Carr and Joyce, your border attorneys. By Outlet Liquor, when you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys. And driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. We're at St. John Fisher University, and it's the last day of training camp. It's the first day of the full preseason slate with three games going tonight, Colts and Ravens, Bengals and Eagles, and Raiders and Seahawks. Those all go tonight. The Bills, of course, play on Saturday against the Giants. And Sal, we asked Sean McDermott yesterday, and he did not have he did not want to share with us yet. Said players still have to find out. Perhaps today in the 9 o'clock hour we find out who plays when for the first preseason game.
Yeah, possibly. If he hasn't told players yet, obviously he wasn't going to reveal it to the media, so we'll see what happens today. There have been times in the past, I was going through this the other day trying to think, like, I don't know, I'm doing this long enough to tell you guys that there's been times where we knew. There's been times, like today maybe, let's say a couple days before. There's been times where we didn't know until maybe the next day leading up, just kind of getting out there somehow, maybe, you know, whatever form that is. And then there's things we didn't know until we got to the stadium, to be quite honest with you. Like, it's just, who knows what the plan is. And I think part of it is really with the injuries. I mean, let's think about it this way, too. Let's just take Josh out of the equation. We can talk about him, but what about a guy like Ray Davis? If James Cook is holding in, if James Cook is not here and he's holding in, how much do you give Ray Davis, even if the starters are playing? Like, do you, right? Like, he's the starter, but, you know, what? Now suddenly you're on your second guy in your depth chart, really, so to speak, as your starter.
Yep.
And if they're not playing, then you probably don't play him at all, to be honest with you. They have every offensive lineman except for Spencer Brown, I would think, available for this game, right?
Yep.
So I think you're okay if you want to play Josh, but you have to think about who's available on the offensive line. Because if you don't have Alec Anderson, you don't have Cedric Van Fram Granger, by the time you take out the first unit, who's getting second unit reps with Mitch Trubisky or with Mike White? I think all those things have to go into play.
I'm glad you brought up Ray Davis. Like, we had a little conversation about that earlier. Hadn't thought about it yet about, you know, not to spend too much time on the Cook thing, but how does it come to a resolution? If all of a sudden the running backs had the injuries that the receivers have had this camp, then it gets tense, right? Oh, yes. Ray Davis is out for a little bit, and now Ty Johnson, too. You are deep in that depth chart, and you have a healthy guy that's just waiting to play. So I don't know that that'll ultimately happen, but, you know, whatever. We're here at the end of camp. The other thing I want to ask you about that, Sal, on the Cook conversation – how does practice change for what we see, what you see from training camp to starting next week? Because the spotlight Cook has here, won't that be lessened once practice goes back to Buffalo to a degree?
Yeah, only by the fans. So it's a great question because Hard Knocks continues through the preseason. They're going to be at the preseason game. They're going to be at next week's joint practice in Chicago. They're going to be at next week's game in Chicago at Tampa. Practice does not change in only in one regard. There are no fans. We get to watch everything still as a media up until the regular season starts. So it doesn't change for us. When I go out to practice next week, let's say Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever they're going to be on the field, there is nothing different other than they're in Orchard Park, and we get to watch in Orchard Park. We get to watch everything, and we can show, okay, there's James Cook on the exercise bike, or he's not here at all. We can see all that. Once you get to the regular season, that's where it changes, where we only get to watch warm-ups. Josh throwing to receivers, offensive linemen doing their thing, and then, okay, guys, back in the media room because we're game planning, and we're going through things, and then we come back out later. So that's when you're guessing. I haven't seen him, but it's been an hour and a half, so okay, he could be here, right? But for the next couple of weeks, you'll know what we see. Now, that said, it also is a little different in Orchard Park because whether it's, I guess, Holden would be different, but if a guy is injured, sometimes, like, he's at the facility training. We just don't see him because he didn't come out to the field. What's the purpose? Here, the tents are right there, so they come right out on the field sometimes. So it's there's all different kind of because of logistics why you might or might not see somebody.
Sal, do you – I don't think you could know this unless somebody has asked it or said it, but is Cook's Holden limited to just on-field work? Like, is he just skipping the practice part of it, you know, keep his – to not risk injury without the long-term extension? I wonder if he's, like, in meetings and if he's doing everything else other than practicing. Like, how far does a Holden really go? Because that's new to all of us.
That's a really good question. I don't know that. I don't know if we could get that information. I don't know if the team would tell you that.
Yeah. Right.
I'm not back there, but I wonder the same thing.
Like, would he be skipping a meeting in the running backs room? Like, it would be.
Here's my guess. This is purely a guess by me. I'm not reporting. I'm just guessing it. I think he's doing all that because then the team, if that were the case, the team could definitely fine him. He'd be missing things. He'd be, you know, your team can give repercussions for that kind of stuff.
Right. That makes sense.
You know, but on-field work, there's nothing that says you can fine or anything like that.
Gotcha.
Sal Capaccio here. We're at St. John Fisher. All right, so yesterday's practice, Spencer Brown back with the team for the first time in team drills.
Yeah.
He detailed what happened. His flare-up got caused by maybe pushing a little too hard in workouts right up to camp. But he kind of made a point to say it's not like it was 3 years ago. That was a different thing. He got that procedure. He feels fine. And then he's had back flare-ups before, and you guys didn't know about it. So I feel like he was kind of trying to calm everybody down.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, you know, it's probably right. When your regular season, let's say it's a flare-up in the regular season, do we know if it would have been bad enough for him to be out there? Or is this, hey, it's training camp. Let's just get you right. We're not going to get you out there, right? We don't know that. We also don't know, you know, exactly the timeline of, you know, when he said it's right before. If it was, like, they say 2 weeks before that, yeah, he's good enough. He can come out here and do some things, right? So they just wanted to be really, really cautious. They wanted to be really careful. There's no doubt. I thought it was also interesting about how he talked about, this is really good insight, how these guys think, probably like any other human being. He was afraid to disappoint people a few years ago. And, like, what are my teammates going to think about me? What are my coaches going to think about me? They're going to think, like, oh, I don't want to be out there. He's had to have a change because, sure, he's been in the league. He signed a massive contract extension. He's a pillar now on the Buffalo Bills. Like, Spencer Brown's not going to take any young guy going, oh, you're not out there. Yeah, heck with you, right? So that part of his life, I think, has probably also allowed him to say, I don't need to push it. I'll be fine. They'll be fine. I'm going to trust them. I don't got to get out there before I'm ready, and I'm going to make sure that I'm ready before I'm out there. And it was good to see him out there, obviously.
Sal, the Bills made a move yesterday, waiving Baylen Spector and bringing in another linebacker. If you have followed Spector's career, this might not be that surprising because of all the injuries. But so, too, like, one on Spector, and also, like, is the middle linebacker battle behind Bernard over, or do you think Joe Andreessen's got other competition?
I think it's over. I mean, to me, it would be a massive upset result if Joe Andreessen isn't the backup middle linebacker, because what are your options beyond him at this point? You could say Shaq Thompson, and I think Shaq Thompson's had a good camp, but he hasn't been healthy now for a week. The thing about Shaq Thompson, though, is he's so versatile, I don't even know if they want to pigeonhole him to say, you're the Mike behind, you know, anybody, or you're the Will. He's just versatile. He can do a lot of different things. We know that's not Dorian Williams' spot. He might train there once in a while or get to know it. That's not his spot. He's the Will linebacker. And honestly, guys, I have not seen enough of Eddie Ulofosu to think that he might not make this team, right? You know, I mean, there's just the numbers there, and I'm thinking, I don't know if Eddie's going to be a guy that you could even, you know, have on the 53. Maybe that's perfect practice squad guy if you can clear waivers at this point after a couple of years now. I think second year in the league. So, yeah, I think it's Joe Andreessen's spot. I mean, look, we've all talked about it. You know, we've come on here. I've said it for months that even if it was close, you probably keep Joe because you don't know if Baylen will continue to stay healthy. And that, I think, at the end of the day, Baylen Specter didn't stay healthy. He hasn't. I did the math.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Out of 50 possible regular season games, he's played 26.
Wow.
And now some of that was healthy scratch rookie year.
Okay, yep.
But he's been on IR three times over the last two seasons, and then he got hurt again in training camp. It's just an issue with him. He can't stay on the field, and for whatever reason. So what's going to happen with Baylen Specter is he today will find out if he clears waivers. Any team can claim him. He hasn't been in the league 4 years. So right now, any team can put a claim. He can be. We can find out he's on, you know, some other team today. The Miami Dolphins claim him. The Patriots claim him. Whatever. If nobody claims him, he reverts back to the Bills, actually. The Bills then can say they're either going to put him on injured reserve, and then he's done for the season. And then at some point, they might give an injury settlement, so then you can actually bring him back later at some point. Or they can decide we're just going to release outright with an injury settlement at that point. You know, they don't have to. But I get the feeling it's basically either IR or injury settlement. And even if that's the case, you could actually bring the guy back at some point, right? Terrell Bernard also on the field yesterday with Matt Milano. First time that we've seen them in a while. Speaking of linebackers, it's just great to see, right? I mean, when those guys are together and healthy, but can you keep them both together and healthy?
Yeah.
And that's the question. Matt Milano made a play yesterday that was unbelievable. And what I mean by that is it wasn't like this highlight reel spectacular like catch or anything, but there was a jet sweep to Elijah Moore. And I mean, Matt Milano saw it and snuffed it out and got to the spot. I wrote like he was shot out of a cannon. Like he got to the spot before Moore could even turn the corner. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Do you almost feel like if there was a theme of this training camp, like something that we would remember about this training camp, because we've had, you know, memorable camps before, would it almost be that, hey, the old guys still got it? Between, like, Matt Milano, Tre'Davious White, you know, like, again, like, this training camp hasn't been, like, the most drama-filled camp. You know, there wasn't a lot of that. It's Cook probably will remember it for, right, is the Holden. But other than that, it's these two guys who have been here a really long time. There was a question about what they have left. And it feels like with Milano for sure and with Trey White that all reviews have been these guys still got it.
Yeah, and I think if you want to go even further, you could put their other draft classmate, Deion Dawkins, in that. Right? I mean, think about he's same class as those guys. The 2017 draft class, right, is just suddenly reemerging on the scene for the Buffalo Bills. Trey White was Sean McDermott's first pick as a draft pick. I do think that's a theme of this camp. Just that these guys, the veterans, the older guys, the Bills have turned over the roster over the last year or so. We know that. Last year they kind of moved on. Jordan and Micah and Trey, right? Stephon Diggs, Mitch Morse. Last year they did that. And they got younger. And then suddenly here come the veterans back in to mix in with those younger guys. And, you know, you hope it's the right mix. But I think the way they're playing, Joe, that's right.
Who has the most to gain this weekend against the Giants? A couple players that you think might, you know, we got one more practice here, of course, and then we're going to get to a game, and the coaches and the fans are going to watch. Is it Christian Wilkerson, Tyrell Shavers, receivers, defensive backs,
backup
quarterbacks, right?
Well, that's my answer. He stole it. Mike White, I think.
Yeah.
I think Mike White has the most to gain, depending on what we see. Maybe Mitch gets most of the work. Maybe Josh starts, Mitch comes in, and then the following week it's Mike getting most of the work. I don't know, but there is a legitimate competition at backup quarterback. And I guess you have to unseat the backup, which is Trubisky. So I think Mike White has most to gain, the way you put it, Jeremy, because if he can make those gains, maybe he can unseat Mitch Trubisky.
Is that the position where the preseason matters the most in a battle like that? Like, how much practice and camp versus preseason for deciding a roster spot? Maybe quarterback would be top of the list for what the preseason matters the most for?
Did you guys hear Lewis Riddick yesterday about Shedeur Sanders?
No.
I was like, what? Like, yeah, you're right, I guess. He was kind of intimating. I don't know if he really – I have to go back and listen if he was saying it was on purpose. They were setting him up to fail on purpose so they could have a reason or anything like that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But what he basically said was right, and it makes a lot of sense. But he said – he goes, I've seen this. This happens. They're going to throw him out there. They're using – I'm just using Sanders as an example here, right? He doesn't get a ton of reps. He's been a little bit – he's had a little injury. He hasn't been getting a ton of reps. But, oh, by the way, you're our starter. He goes out there. He doesn't have the reps, so it doesn't go well. And then now the coaches have a reason to say, what the hell are you doing? Right? Come on. Wait, well, coach, I didn't have the reps. You didn't give, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
You're the quarterback. And he was almost saying, like, it's almost sabotage sometimes for some guys if they want to get there. And I don't want to put words in this mouth, but go listen to the segment. It was really interesting. Mm-hmm. But he said, like, he goes, I've seen this happen at camp. And you're not, like, you, the guy has no chance, but the coaches don't want to hear it. But it's truly, they weren't prepared.
Hmm. All right, when do they play?
I know, right? Yeah, it was just really interesting.
Is that tonight also?
No.
The Browns?
The Browns do not play tonight.
Okay.
Three games tonight. It's Eagles.
Why would they want to be sabotaging Shedeur Sanders?
I don't know if he said they'd pick. Right, but I do remember, wait a minute, they have five QBs,
five,
right?
Yeah.
And there was talk. There was talk at the draft. They only drafted him because the owner wanted him at that point.
Okay, right.
Right? Right,
that makes sense. Yeah.
So,
and he's not going to be mad that you're starting him. Like, by the way, they play tomorrow against Carolina.
But it just was
sense.
Really.
So the owner wants to see him.
The owner wants to see him, and maybe the coach is
maybe
like
the coach didn't want him, and he's like, I'm going to put him out there when he's not ready.
I'm
going to
show the owner what.
But
this guy
even
is.
Even if it's not on purpose, sabotage. I don't think that's his word.
Yeah.
Even if it's not on purpose, it is something that you have to be mindful of, which is, well, if I'm going to start the guy in preseason, I know we're not game planning, but. How much work has he had with any of the concepts, reps-wise?
Right.
One quick thing. I don't know if you have a thought on this. Smelling salts and that story of the last 24, 48
yeah,
hours.
Yeah, so let me get this straight. I want to make sure I have this. Players can still use them. You just can't be provided by the team, correct?
Correct.
They have to bring them themselves.
Yeah. I have to be honest with you guys. Like, I have seen players doing smelling salts in the sidelines for many years, and I've never thought about it that much.
Yeah.
So when people start talking about it, I get it because you don't see it, and you're like, oh, wait, they use smelling salts?
Yeah.
Do you remember when – I think it was actually Ben Volen, who we all like, we actually play golf with. Like, Ben Volen wrote something last year about how, I mean, he basically, maybe it was in Houston, like, he kind of wrote that Josh wasn't checked enough for concussion, he just did smelling salts and went out there. And I'm like, dude, like, these guys do smelling salts all the time, though.
Yeah, it was Houston last year when he got knocked hard, went into the tent, and then came out quickly because the Bills turned the ball over. Was that it?
That's
something
I think what
like
happened.
That.
That sounds right.
And like, he kind of used smelling salts as, all they did was give him smelling salts. I'm like, I that's kind of a thing that you do, though.
I don't.
Like,
I don't,
everybody uses it.
I don't know how often Josh does it, but Baker Mayfield, I think I saw said yesterday, he does one before every drive. So
there's these little smelling salts bottles, right? You ever seen these little tiny things?
Like the little packets?
Yeah, they're little tiny bottles. I see. Like, they look like little tubes.
Okay.
And, like, sometimes I'll just see them laying on the sidelines, like, in between drives or games and during the game. Because the guy does it right before he goes out.
Listen, if you've played hockey before ever especially, you know that there are a couple guys, if not a lot of guys, that, like, they will fight you if you take away their – I mean, that is basically what George Kittle, like, went onto a set at NFL Network to gripe about this because – There are guys, there are definitely athletes that feel like they need.
Because I haven't read it in depth. What is the reason? Is it there's something inside it that's harmful? I don't think there is.
That part I've not found out.
I don't know that it's great for you, but obviously what is happening is it's like it is waking you up.
Yeah.
Like it is getting you
jacked
up.
But like what I have to read more about why they're saying, like, well, we don't want them giving. Now,
okay. I'm sure there is some consequence.
Trainers can't give a lot of things, by the way.
That's what I was going to say. It's probably – this is their CYA. Like, hey, you want to use them, that's you.
Yeah.
They didn't come from us.
I got it.
And a quick search of this is it's about, you know, the risks involved to boost alertness, but also whether or not they're even effective. So the NFL actually, Mark Maskey had this. They never banned it and then went back. They just said, we aren't providing them.
Okay.
It was it was always that. It was just kind of reported in a way that it looked like they banned them and then walked back.
Kittle made it sound like they banned them.
Right, and they did not. I think that's what happened.
So maybe that's the problem. Kittle made
maybe
it sound
just,
like they banned them.
He just got information that said, we're not, hey, we can't give this to you anymore.
That might
what
have
do you
been
mean? He
happened.
Thought it was banned, but... Yeah, it's actually been going on for a long, long time. So
we're going to bring in senior goaltending correspondent Owen Paul.
Oh, wow.
He'll talk to us about smelling salts because he just sent us a text about smelling salts.
All right.
Yeah, I would have never made it to the illustrious heights of the North American Hockey League without my smelling salts.
Wow.
And they are definitely not good to be doing the amount that these guys do them. They definitely they fry a few brain cells when you inhale them as much as us athletes were doing.
What's like the percentage of the use by the team? Because like even me playing like beer league, it's half the guys.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I would
half
say
the guys are doing it.
As I got
those guys just want to pretend they're in the NHL.
Yeah,
sure, that's
a big
right.
thing.
That's probably-
but I know when I was playing, I would say 75% of my teammates in the North American League were banging smelling salts in between shifts, like on the bench.
Wow.
What?
It's
in
very
shifts
very common.
That
oh,
often.
Yeah. I would do it every time there's a commercial break for our games. We get one a period. It was halfway through the period. I would go to the bench and I would hammer smelling salts.
How did you get them? Were they provided for you by trainers?
No. I think similar to what the NFL is doing here,
you had
we were not allowed to be given them by our teams.
Okay.
And I think what often happened was somebody on the team would get a prescription somehow for a bunch of smelling salts. And then
do
they
you
would
need a
just
prescription?
That's a great question. I'm guessing now you need a prescription.
I think for the top, like for the real sort of juicy ones, you need a medical.
Because come to think of it, I don't think I've ever walked to my local drugstore and seen smelling salts.
See, I've always assumed you
right
could.
There. Like you got the end cap. Hey, Max, go grab yourself a drink. Dad, we're going to grab some smelling salts?
See,
like, I've never seen that.
Everyone's hockey team's got the guy that is the guy that brings them every week, and I can't imagine that like my buddy that used to bring him like had a prescription for
no,
this.
I think
but maybe, I don't know.
There are sort of tiers of levels. Like, Sal, you mentioned there are some that come in those tubes.
Yeah.
Those are little bottles that are just full of what's in those popper packets.
Okay.
And so I think maybe the poppers you need – an actual prescription, and maybe the bottle you don't. The bottle you might be able to buy, but I know this is hitting close to home for a lot of these guys because it's.
Yeah.
I mean, guys love them. They work. I'll tell you.
I mean, between shifts, holy cow, that's it's like prolonged exposure there. All right, thanks, Owen. What else? Anything else? Less.
We had dinner last night. I walked over with John Scott, Josh Reed, and Matt Perino to the Pittsford Dairy right across right next to it, and the Trade Day Sunday is on the menu.
Oh, look at that!
Yes, we saw that.
Now people were like looking at it, go, wow, $12.95. But other people said, yeah, but have you priced ice cream at a lot of places? Like it's actually.
It is.
Know,
yeah, it's getting
it's
up
not
there.
That bad. So it is on the menu. The Trade Day Sunday, so that was good. That's it. I mean, that's a wrap here. I mean, Sean McDermott's going to speak at 9:15. We'll find that out today, maybe, about players. Team will have a day off tomorrow. I'll actually be in with Bulldog tomorrow evening, and then Saturday it gets going again, man.
Yeah, and real quick with you, like, the future of training camp here, like, is as solid maybe as it's felt in a while.
I think
so. They had been doing this year-to-year thing, and maybe even that's still going on, but there was, for years, Sal, this wonder about whether McDermott liked coming here for camp, and I don't know that that's ever been more solid now that they do than right now.
They absolutely like it. They like to be here only for about 2.5 weeks. But the other thing is, where are you going to go? And they're not going to be – you just had Pete on. For all the things Pete was talking about next year, what's happening, could you imagine trying to do a training camp in that space?
Definitely
not. No way. I can't imagine it. That'd be amazing if they did. I would think it would be here next year, but – who knows? Maybe they're somewhere else because I think that they have to kind of renew it, you know, every year. But this is the perfect venue.
All right. Sal Capaccio, he'll be covering practice today, the final practice from St. John Fisher. And we will do our best to carry Sean McDermott today at 9:15. Maybe some announcements on what's going to happen in Saturday's preseason game against the Giants. Thank you, Sal.
You got it, guys.
Back with, if you want to throw us a phone call, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe live from St. John Fisher here on WGR.
live from Buffalo Bills training camp here at St. John Fisher, Jeremy and Joe. And joining us is Bills Chief Operating Officer and Sabres Chief Operating Officer, Pete Quelly. Good morning.
Morning, guys.
Good to have you here. Good to have you here. Last day, is it the last day? Does everybody leave or does it take time to pack up this operation? I mean, there's a lot going on here, and this is the last practice.
It takes time, but it's definitely getaway day.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as this practice is over, people are going to take off and get down the thruway and get back to Buffalo. We're ready to go.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices. At your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, yeah. Well, final day here at Fisher. Watching Hard Knocks, one of the reviews is that St. John Fisher comes off looking like a star of the show. Like, it's beautiful, the shots, and they really kind of drove home in that first episode what being here means for you guys.
Yeah, you know, we brought it here. It was a college, and now it's a university. It's really grown. And I just want to thank St. John Fisher University, Dr. Rooney. They've done an incredible job here. You know, we're one of six teams that go away for camp, and I'm glad we do. You can tell every time you come here, it's foundational to the success of the organization, and what the college does here puts us in a great position.
I wonder, you get some young players, of course, that come straight from college, so the college atmosphere is not that unusual. Do you ever find players talking about the way they did camp before, and then they come here, they're kind of thrown back in time and what that's like for them?
Yeah, I think most of them like it. I think this whole transition's happened because people have built these amazing training facilities and they don't want to leave. But I think sometimes they maybe, you know, undervalue the culture that's being built in a situation like this. So these guys come here and it's so communal. Everyone's together, whether it's breakfast, lunch, dinner, doing things after practice, hanging out together. And it's not just it's football. It's every aspect of the organization is integrated. And I think almost to a man, people really enjoy coming here.
Yeah, there's the going away, and then there's also, I'm sure for you, like the Rochester footprint in the market for you and coming here for just a ton of Bills fans obviously here that you'd want to come out for once a year.
Yeah, I mean, Bills Mafia is just as strong in Rochester as it is in Buffalo. It's fun, and you know, for me, I'm from here. The camp's now been here 25 years. It's almost impossible to think about it, and it's evolved so much, and it's even better than when it started. And when you sit down with, you know, Sean and Brandon and talk to them about how they see it and how it works, that's when you really start to think about how special it is.
How much is it now kind of just do it the same as you've done a couple years before? Like next year, if you're back, is just we know the formula. Is there a lot to really evaluate and tweak, or is it just kind of it works as it is?
Yeah, not as much. You know, year one, I spent a lot of time in discovery kind of looking. And again, from when I left to when I came back, it is so much better in every single aspect of it, whether it's the executional stuff on the football side or from a marketing perspective or fan experience, it's better. So yeah, honestly, there's not a lot to do. I think we're always looking for ways to get better, but this camp operates at a high level.
Plenty of stuff to get to on the business side. There was a story that the NFL draft, you guys have been in pursuit of the NFL draft, hosting that. The timeline on that looks to have shifted a little bit. So yeah, what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, a little bit. So every single year, you basically have to resubmit your expression of interest. So we did that again, and as we started looking at the overall landscape and, you know, with the new stadium coming online, when the old stadium's going to come down, from a timing perspective, it felt like 29-30 would be better for us, put us in a better position to kind of execute things. And, you know, after going to – we sent a team down to Green Bay, and they looked at the layout there and how that was set up. And, they, you know, the layout's important. Making sure it's authentic to the market is really important. And we try to make sure we have time to check every single box and be ready for something like that. And, you know, one thing I want you to – people realize it's not a layup. It's a very competitive process. This has become really big. Most teams and most markets want it. It's in a lot of ways a public-private partnership. There's a lot of work to do to get it done, but we want it. And the league is aware, and we're going to do everything we can to get it.
You feel like Green Bay was the closest to what it might look like here because they did it in a parking lot, right? They did it on their grounds by their stadium, whereas Detroit's downtown. That's a little different. Pittsburgh's doing it at the park. Is it the So, like, they're different ideas, but you might want to most resemble Green Bay?
That's why we sent people down there. I think that vision, we could replicate something like that. You know, the other things to consider, too, is there's great spots in Buffalo, you know, whether it's Niagara Falls, you know, whether it's something downtown, whether it's something maybe north of the border. There's other things you can do. But the primary footprint we would anticipate being at Highmark, and yeah, I think it is a lot more similar to, you know, what Green Bay is, so that's why we sent people there.
Stadium milestones to come. Stadium's going up. People are getting their tours, grabbing tickets. You know, there's the first bit of steel. There's the last bit of steel. There's the canopy. What are the next potential days that fans might be able to kind of note?
I don't know if it's big milestones anymore. It's details. You know, the field's starting to go in. The lockers have arrived. The escalators are going in. And, you know, we've got to get that structure closed so the final pieces over the winter – we don't want to lose any time working, so enclosing the entire structure is going to be a big part of it. So I don't know if it's definitive milestones necessary, but a lot of details. And we walked through it Friday, and it was just incredible to see how far it's come along. The thing that jumps out to me the most is we've got this great training facility right across the street. Everything that's at that training facility is at the stadium. So it's a more seamless experience on game days. So when the players show up, they don't have to really come to the training facility. They can go right to the stadium and get to work.
The new stadium project, some could see storylines. I think there were a couple, like a month or two ago, that the full completion of it won't be until like December of next year. So when a fan sees that, you know, they might think, wait a minute, I thought, you know, start of the season obviously is in September, but is that going to be the type of stuff that maybe a fan going to games won't even notice?
Yeah, I mean, punch list stuff. We'll be ready to go. You know, we're planning to get in the keys in July. There's a lot of testing that needs to take place. There's nowhere else to play. Right, unless we're going to Al-Hai Stadium to play a game. Like, we are playing in that facility in 2026, so it'll be open. I don't think anything more than any normal construction project that anyone's ever seen, so it'll be ready to go.
When it comes to the build-out of scheduling, you know, soft opening, warm-up games, blue and red preseason, are you starting to map out the things that might be your opening few events?
Yeah, I think all the above. You know, I want to make sure we get season ticket holders through that building so they can really, you know, visualize where their seats are, but to really be in there and be part of that process. And candidly, as many times as possible, one of the bigger challenges we've had now is like so many people want to go through it.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's a construction project, so you can only execute that so many times at, you know, a certain level. But, yeah, we want to get in there. Definitely a soft opening. Definitely a bigger event. I think what, you know, I've come to realize is the first thing that needs to happen on that field, big, it's got to be a football game, you know, for us. Like, you're opening up this spectacular $2 billion stadium. It's a football-first facility. It's for the team, first and foremost. So, you know, when we get into preseason, we want to make sure it's tested. But as far as events go, that'll be the first big event. I would, you know, assume we're going to do a blue and red there. Ramp it up. How do we make it even better? Do we look at maybe doing an alumni game as part of it, for instance? Like, make it even bigger than it's been in the past. And I'm going to sit down with everybody in the building and particularly with Sean and Brandon, just kind of talk about it and try to map it out as early as possible. But I would think that would probably be the first big event in there.
Where are you at on progress on PSLs? We talked to a lot of people that in like these recent days are going through that process now. How far along are you on both PSLs and season tickets?
It's going really well. You know, when I first got here, we were going through this whole kind of premium process and everyone felt like we needed to get through that first. And I think people were a little concerned, maybe a little impatient, which you completely get. So we've really made an effort to get everybody through. We're literally now into the last wave of season ticket holders. So almost everybody's been through the building or through this process. By the time we open up the season, every single current season ticket holder will have a chance to go through it. And I think the one thing I want to make sure now, and the one thing that we would all regret, is if somebody is in the current building, didn't feel like they got an opportunity to move over.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, how do we take a step back? How do we reconnect with anybody who maybe hasn't been responsive or hasn't decided yet to make sure that they get a chance to be in there? So that's kind of the next step. We'll get through the current season ticket holders by the start of the season. We'll kind of go out to them again, and then we'll go to the waiting list. And right now we're, you know, I don't like to use the words ahead of schedule, but it's pacing extremely well. About 80% of the building is already sold through. We've got a year left. We've got a massive waiting list to go through, so we're really well positioned.
And the stories at the start of that, you mentioned like the premium seating experience happened first. Those numbers, of course, are big and maybe sticker shock for a lot of people. When you get to where you are now, are you able to kind of share the breadth of how wide the options are, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, we were saying that from the beginning, that there would be a price point for everybody. We would lower the barrier to entry. We want everybody from the current stadium be over there. We don't want it to be an impediment. You know, in a lot of ways, you had to start with some of those higher priced products. And, you know, what was interesting is how they moved really quickly and we sold through them really quickly. So it wasn't an issue for a lot of people. There's a lot of people, I think, that wanted to be in those premium areas. once we got through that and started moving into the lower and upper bowl, then the process really escalated and went very fast. But, you know, we're already down to a $1,000 PSL price point right now, likely to be another one coming here in the near future. So, you know, I'm glad we've got a price point for everybody and an opportunity for everyone to participate in the new building.
Regarding the stadium and the rest of it, we always talk about the structure, the landscape, the lots. I have a buddy that asked me, parking, like when will parking plans, when will that kind of be figured out? Is that already figured out? And like how that's all going to work regarding the stadium and where to park and egress? Are there plans for that to be a little better? Understanding that you're also going to have another stadium coming down and, you know, it's been busy for the last couple of years.
I would say for the most part it's figured out. We just haven't really announced anything yet because we've been working through this PSL process and making sure. I think it's going to be better. You know, there's a number of different entry points, the way it's set up, the way that they're going to handle Abbott kind of moving forward. I think we're hopeful because, you know, that's the process, right? It's not just about the game. It's when you leave your house and what it takes to get there and what are your plans for tailgating and what's it like when you walk into the building and how is it on exit. So, you know, obviously we've had a lot of experience in the old building and we've seen how that worked. It's been a little challenging because there's been some closures. So it's probably been a little bit worse than it has been when it all opens up. And then even as we move forward, when the old stadium comes down in March of 27, then it should get even a little bit better. But, yeah, we feel like we're in a good place there. We haven't rolled anything out yet, but that's definitely something we've been working on.
Any further down the line on what to do with the space that the current stadium sits on?
Not yet. I mean, it's obviously going to always be part of our campus. This is one of the reasons that we go to places like Green Bay and look around and try to think long-term about what it is. Preliminary discussions, because there's been so much focus on getting that stadium up and running and putting it where it needs to be, and you know, that's just the next step in the process, but we're just not there yet.
I did think of one more milestone. When do we find about the giant buffaloes? I mean, you know, if I don't ask about that, people are going to be mad at me.
Look, it's coming. The foundation of the family circle is being built right now. So we're getting close. I think in the next couple of months, we'll probably start releasing some of the concepts and people can look forward to what's going to be there.
All right.
Farewell season at the stadium, the red helmets being announced a couple weeks ago. Feedback on that, I feel like, has been pretty universally. But I mean, the nostalgia play for that, you know, I guess my question would be, you know, how you arrived at that in the game at the end of the season, like that I'm sure was on purpose, like close the stadium, at least in the regular season, with that helmet.
Yeah, you know, that's a tough process because when you're closing out a stadium with all that history, are we doing it right? Are we doing enough? And we just kept sitting down and kind of iterating on what was the best way to do this. The red helmet piece has been on the radar for a long time. And there's a lot of hoops you got to jump through with the NFL even to get that approved in the first place. But you saw all the kind of anecdotal excitement around it. And then it was a little bit of a perfect storm. Rumors about whether it was going to happen, whether it was not going to happen. And we didn't change the timeline at all. It just happened to sync up. And then when we announced it, it just blew up. I think through our social channels alone, almost 25 million impressions on that on Instagram. That's the second most traffic post we've had all year, and the one that beat it was Josh Allen's MVP announcement. So, you know, obviously people are really excited about it. I'm glad we're bringing it back. It felt right, like the right way to close it out. And, you know, we're looking now, what are the other pieces? Who do we bring back? How do we transport people back in time as much as possible for that last game? Because it's going to be a really special moment.
Regarding the bringing it back and the hoops and – is it a one-off, or is it the kind of thing that maybe people can look forward to reappearing occasionally in the future?
I mean, maybe. I think it's like a starting as a one-off. You know, you really are supposed to be wearing three helmets during the course of the season, so we had to go back to the league and say we'd really like this kind of approval so that we can roll it out. There's a lot of excitement behind it, and they granted that. Now, you know, it's hard to say moving forward. I'm glad it's in our portfolio, if you will, because we know people love it, so it'd be cool to bring it back again. There's no plans right now.
We are 3 weeks from the reveal of the rivalry series set. So you did refer to us earlier this camp as you think we're like uniform experts. You know, like you did say that to us.
Yep.
How excited should Bills fans be for these?
Look, first of all, I like that you guys are into it. There's so many fans that love the uniforms, love to talk about helmets and have – like, it's subjective, too. So, you know, people aren't going to love everything that you do, but I think I'm very excited. I think you've seen some of the reactions from the players. This is, I would say, more of a league-driven process that we're supporting, but we're creating our own content. We're going to be rolling it out. There's a whole merchandise capsule that's going to be part of this as well. I would say I feel like it's very authentic Buffalo. I think it really represents the team and the region. as well. I think people are going to be excited.
Without giving away what it is, does that almost kind of remind you of, you come from the NBA, Charlotte, like the City Connect series that they've done there, you know, like trying to go more to, it could be different colors, you know, it could be different, you know, landscapes of your uniform. Like, is that, again, not without asking, is that exactly what they're trying to do? But it seems like it's different.
Yeah, I think conceptually, yes. I think that's what they're trying to do for all the teams and kind of create that, you know, that feeling that it's somehow connected to the team and connected to the city. I think it's cool to be part of the first rollout of something like this. You know, it's right. It's interesting. You know, the team has transcended the market. The brand has transcended the market. So you're on the radar for things like Hard Knocks and things like the Rivalry Series. So it's a great position to be in, to kind of be a first mover in a lot of these spaces, like this uniform.
Was there a process for that? Did the league just call one day and say, you're in?
They said we were in, and then the process, though, began from a design standpoint. Right. So we've had a lot of input along the way. There's been a number of checkpoints. I mean, they had a direction, you know, that they wanted to go in, and then we were able to sit down and make sure that our marketing people and our design team were at the table, and everybody on the football side to the owner, and make sure that, you know, we felt good about what was coming out.
Pete Quelle here joining us from training camp. A couple quick things on the Sabres. You had the announcement of the KeyBank partnership on the naming rights. Anything on the lease? Like, we know that there's a date there, so what, because many had speculated perhaps that announcement was going to be something regarding the lease. So the lease on KeyBank Center, anything to report on that?
Yeah, look, first, I'm glad you guys have asked, because I think it's been mischaracterized a little bit. The lease is not up. Now, could we opt out at the end of September if we wanted to? Sure. Or we can just kind of sit tight, it'll roll over, and it'll have another 5 years on it. And then there's a number of subsequent options after that. So I think we're all in a good spot. It's really more about, you know, no lease is perfect. So we've been talking to the county, and Mark Polikar is actually going to be out here today. We've been talking to the state, just kind of looking big picture about the future of the arena at the same time. But I would anticipate it just rolling over and then continuing to sit down and talk about, okay, we've got a 30-year-old building. I believe it's the oldest NHL building that has not gone through a major renovation yet. Let's just talk about where we're going in the future. And then as the lease kind of continues to roll over, let's get into more detail about what the future could look like.
Major renovations, are they possible? How do hockey rinks do that? It's all inside, right? You're not talking new building in that scenario. Yeah. You're talking about projects. We know new roof, new Jumbotron. These are improvements that have happened. What's next? The seats, the bowl? I mean, what exactly could you do, and what might you explore?
Yeah, I mean, you guys know what we did last year. We've got a couple of things we're going to be announcing here in the next 2 weeks that we're working on right now that'll be ready for the season as well. So we wanted to do something every year. But yeah, looking at it big picture, how do you phase something like this in? So we've engaged with Populous. They worked with us on the new stadium as well. We've been talking to them about what's the future of this building look like, what are the areas that we should impact. We get a lot of feedback from our season ticket holders on what they want. You know, seats are obviously on the radar. There's some things that make sense to do now, and there's some things that might make more sense as part of a bigger, broader renovation. So you've got to balance those things. But you know, I've had a year under the hood to look at it. I still love the building. It needs work. There's no question about it. It's a great hockey barn. The one thing that's obvious is how important it is to Buffalo. We had 1.3 million people in that building last year. Like, I don't know what number two is for drawing people to Buffalo, but it can't be anywhere close. That can be a catalyst for growth in the city if it's done right. So whatever we do, we want it to have a broader impact on the waterfront, on the canal side, on everything else that we're doing there. So when people come there, there's something to do. You know, we had those Bandits playoff games, and they were rolling, and I go down there, I'm like, where are these people going? What are they doing when they come to Buffalo? So let's create a strategy that I think is a little bit more overarching than what has been there in the past.
Regarding any sort of major project that is a renovation-based one, like when we were talking about this for the football stadium, we would be able to point to what happened at Soldier Field, what happened in Lambeau, and sometimes it's a retrofit. The Bills Stadium went through an overhaul with different towers and bathrooms. Are there any NHL rinks that have gone through major renovations, and over the course of a year or two, they just phase them in, and by the time it's all done, it does look like a majorly updated building? Like, I just don't know exactly who to look at. I'm not sure if you have examples.
Yeah, I don't think there's as many as maybe there are in football,
right,
for instance. But first of all, you go look at those new buildings and say, what can we incorporate? Seattle, Las Vegas, not that we're going to be at that level, but some amazing technology and features, amenities in those buildings. Boston, I think, is a pretty good example. You know, they went through a major overhaul there, and not only in the building itself, but around the property. That's become more of a destination. They've got mixed use built up around it. So there are a couple of examples, not as many as there are maybe in football, but I think the vision of, you know, how do you create something that draws more people in? Because it's obviously it's the Sabres, it's the Bandits, it's all the marquee events that you have there as well. But making a year-round property out of that thing, so we're bringing people in the Buffalo as much as we possibly can.
Uniform-wise, I don't think there's really anything to go over. Sabres-wise, feels like you're in a pretty good spot. Although, is the black and red just like a year-to-year thing? Is there a time on that, or is that just that's working, we're just going to keep going?
Yeah, look, the feedback's been great. People love it. I mean, it's almost like there's a generational timeline where people love, you know, the old jersey and people love the black and red. I think we did a poll on it. It really almost came in at 50-50, which is crazy to me. But, you know, we've got 15 games that we're going to be doing in black and red this year, and I think that's performed well. We've got some things, nothing I can disclose right now, but on the horizon that we're looking at relative to the uniforms. You know, that's a traditional hockey market and fan base. So I think for me, you only want to deviate so much. Like, how do you make sure you're tying in the things that people really love, even if you're making tweaks to move that forward?
Pete Quelle here from St. John Fisher.
One last thing, hockey-wise, because we've talked a lot about the new stadium. Is there any sort of process when it comes to getting outdoor games? We saw another one announced yesterday. Is that something you have to, I assume, apply for? Is that conversations with the league? How is that? How does that go?
Yeah, another great question. That's something we really want to do. You know, 28 is the 20-year anniversary of the Winter Classic. Love to tie something in there. I think the Winter Classic might be a little tougher. The way the NFL schedule is now and when you would put a game in there and how you would then prepare for the next one makes it challenging. But the Stadium Series, we could absolutely execute. We have had conversations with the league, talked to Gary Bettman about it. They would love to bring that game back to Buffalo. They would love to do something potentially around the 20th anniversary of the old Winter Classic. And they would love to do something in the new building.
Yeah.
So I feel very good about that process and the opportunity to bring a game like that to Buffalo.
Is the new building, would it be easier to execute, or would it be, I mean, it's grass, which might present some challenge in terms of, like, throwing something on top of it. It's after football season, but, you know.
Yeah, plenty of time to get things back in shape. I think it's going to be easier. You know, just that building, we're talking about a, you know, that building, and you remember the old Winter Classic and how it was kind of in the middle of the field and everything was so far away. This building that we have now, the new Highmark Stadium, is, you know, that's a technology masterpiece, and executing events like this and bringing them in and out are going to be a lot easier than they were in the past.
Very good. Definitely. Thanks for joining us, and you know, congratulations on a successful camp, and see you back in Buffalo.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. See you there.
Pete Quelle here on WGR. Sal Capaccio joins us top of the hour. We'll recap yesterday's workouts practice here from St. John Fisher and preview today's final practice. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. All right, good morning from St. John Fisher, Jeremy White, and Joe DiBiase. And joining us here in our pavilion that we set up in for a couple weeks is Bills head coach Sean McDermott. Good morning. Well, we got to get you up here. Sorry about that. There you go. You got it.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great to be with you guys this morning on this beautiful summer morning in Western New York.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been nice weather, and two more practices left. You were telling us before you came on that you're up early. What time's the workout?
I think I hit the track probably. It's not as early as it is during the season, but I think 5:30 somewhere in there.
All right, okay. Yeah. I've been thinking about this for a while. I just think there's a potential opportunity for like the Sean McDermott workout of the day, and you just tell Bills Mafia like this is what I'm doing today, and get everybody on your workout plan and just go for that.
I love that. Great idea. You know? Let's do it.
Yeah, yeah. I like it.
The only challenge would be what happens on the days when I don't do it. Then I'm slacking.
Everyone be waiting for what's McDermott.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
be an artist,
be an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
Kermit doing today, and then it doesn't come. Like, I guess it's my off day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sitting with us. Couple things to get to. Any plans yet, decisions on what you're going to do for the first preseason game regarding starters? Like, who might play, who might sit?
We're getting there as a staff. It's been busy planning wise, just overall for this practice, the next practice. That's some of what we started talking about yesterday, and we'll finish that as a staff tonight. So respectfully trying to do things in the right order. I want to make sure we go through it as a staff, make sure we alert the players and communicate with them, and then we'll talk about it.
Yesterday, an off day. Any good news on the injury front? Expecting anyone back today?
Minimally. We're going to continue to ramp up Terrell Bernard and some of those guys. So not really anybody fully coming back off of that list, unfortunately. But I do feel like we're getting a little bit healthier. It's just not showing right now.
Assuming you would also be very careful with those injured guys for Saturday's preseason game?
Yes, correct. I mean, the hardest part is, you know, some of these guys have been out for 10 days, going on 14 days, and I don't, you know, they although they may be getting a few reps tomorrow, it's just, to me, kind of early to just throw them out there with no leash on them and let them go, and the chances of something, you know, happening or reoccurring is just too high at that point.
Any news, any update on James Cook and whether or not you expect him out here today?
Yeah, he will not be out here today. Really nothing's changed at this point.
Okay. So getting out here to camp, you know, it's been a off season about new pieces on the defensive side of the football. Does that make it any different for you? You know, new players every year, but it seemed like this year there was more of a focus on adding more pieces and maybe getting more opportunities to do different things on that side of the ball.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, we want to be continually kind of tilling the soil, right? And defensively, this was an opportunity for us to do that, and adding the front pieces in particular have been important for us, what they've shown so far is promise. They really have. All three of those guys up front, TJ, Landon, and Dion, are off to great starts. They're all different players, but we're already seeing their impact, right? And real excited about the direction that they're going to go at this point. And then, unfortunately, with Max getting injured early, so he's going to be behind a little bit. There's no way around that. When he gets healthier, we'll be able to get him up to speed a little bit, and then he's just going to have to play through some things. Whether he comes back and plays corner or helps us on special teams, it'll be a little bit of a progression there.
How had you liked what he had done so far?
I did. I liked it. You know, the speed showed up. He's incredibly conscientious, as everyone has seen since the night of the draft. You know, embraces the growth mindset. Really wants to be good, takes it to heart. It's important to him, and I thought he was off to a good start and really probably, honestly, his best practice the day before, which is unfortunate because then the next practice he incurred the injury.
Is there a different technique or challenge to coaching a player that has that level of speed at that position? Because I'd imagine he probably feels like he could break on the ball any given play,
yeah.
And there, I'm sure, would be some teaching about discipline, and he's got veterans in that room, but is he any different because he actually has that advantage to his game?
Well, he's a lot faster than I am, so for me to run beside him is, I'm sprinting and he's jogging, right? But no, the speed is real. The biggest thing playing defense, if you can think through this lens, is reaction, right? They're moving one direction. Can you change direction and then regain your speed? And he has the speed. The transition piece is the critical element to that. It's the connector, if you will, of going from one direction, changing that direction, getting into another direction, and then getting up to speed again. He has that speed. The change of direction is there as well. It's just grooving it over and over and over again. Like, I'll bring up Mark Kelso, right? So over the years, I was a big fan of Mark Kelso, not even growing up in Buffalo, but I think one of the things that he mastered was the change of direction, the transition, getting in his break and coming out of the break, and then also the angles, you know, the intelligence of the game. And so a lot of playing defense is not only reacting, but it's also knowing angles.
Yeah. No positives about his injury specifically, obviously, but is it comforting at all to have Tre'Davious look the way he's looked, at least if you would agree with that? Most accounts have been that he has looked very strong since coming back here.
He has. And the way he has handled Max and coming back overall, it's no surprise, but his character has shown through day in and day out, and the way he's helped lead and mentor, and yet he looks as good as he's looked in a few years now.
in our conversation with Bobby Babich, he mentioned being a big fan of Joey Bosa going back. And, like, I wonder what that's like, getting a player you probably watched play for a long time, be at the top of the game, and finally he's on your team and you get a chance to kind of get your hands on him and work with him. What's it been like with Bosa?
You know, we didn't interact a lot just in terms of the amount of times we played the Chargers. So getting to know him, being around him, I think that's been the cool piece of it. And not from a, oh, it's Joey Bosa, but more from a Joey Bosa the person, right? I know it's not maybe what people are interested in, but he's a tremendous person that really loves football, and he takes a lot of pride in and being good at what he does and trying to stay healthy as well. It's on our mind, but it's also on his mind, which is good to know, in a way that he cares about it. He's doing everything he can to kind of change the narrative a little bit, if you will, and I respect that a ton.
Seems like, you know, watching Hard Knocks and listening to Joey Bosa say spent more time with teammates in the last 6 weeks than he had in previous years. Like it seems like the whole thing coming together is about the idea of you get players, you aim for players that want to come play football and be together. And that's really what this program is about for you.
It's huge, right? That connection. When you study successful teams, it's very, very few are not connected, right? And so that connection is important for us. Off the field the other night, we went and had ice cream and as a team. And here's pro, you know, NFL athletes that are, you know, just taking time to slow down and get to know one another a little bit more, you know, forming that connection. And it was a great time and fun to watch the guys, just stand back and watch them enjoy each other's company. And then what that does is it builds connection on the football field, right? When you know each other a little bit more, respect each other, trust one another. So it doesn't happen all at once, but inch by inch.
That ice cream place, we saw Pittsburgh Dairy. We saw it on Hard Knocks last night with Trey White and Christian Benford in the Trey Day Sunday. did you guys watch the episode? Did you watch it? I mean, you guys are the stars of it. Are you interested in how it comes out?
I am from the standpoint of making sure that it's painting the players in the right light. I think that's important. These guys are out here working hard. They're doing it for a reason, and they know that they're a part of something bigger in Buffalo, and that's true of all players that come here, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it is important to me from that standpoint. I don't really seek the camera or the microphone. You guys know that. But anyway, you know, my job is to coach them and get them ready to go.
For me, watching it, the thing that I feel like maybe your fans are brought into is, you know, practice. We see practice. They know about practice. What observers from the outside can't see during a practice, they can't hear you. Mm-hmm. They can't hear you talking to Josh after a throw or the technique of a player. And, of course, it probably goes without saying, but for us to, I think, get an inside look in the communication that's happening on every rep and every practice rep that's out there, mm-hmm. it kind of drives home how valuable and how much you are working throughout these 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks here at Fisher.
Oh, it's work nonstop. It really is. Even yesterday on the day off, you know, players had the day off. Coaches are working, staff is working, you're planning, as I already mentioned, you're trying to get yourself and the team ready to go, paint the vision for the next X amount of days leading into the game this weekend, and then the players are working too. I know some of them took some time off, but some of those guys are spending, even healthy players, spending 2 hours in the training room making sure they're getting treatment and keeping their bodies where they need to keep them.
The other player, I mean, there were a few players that were highlighted last night. At the beginning, there's a lot of Deion Dawkins in it. I imagine there'll be a lot of Deion Dawkins in this. Is he kind of just the perfect example of, because, I mean, you know from all the years, his character, and we get to see a little of that, and he's becoming a bigger star, I think, in the league because of that he is, like, kind of the perfect example of guys feeling comfortable being themselves here?
Huge, right? And when they know what's expected and when they know what we value, I think that bodes for that, right, where they can open up, be their true selves, experience, you know, really joy and having fun playing football and also being themselves. Like, I'm sure people like coming to work and feel good about when they're coming to work and they're happy and they're like, hey, this is fun, this is a good thing to be around, there's good people, I'm having fun playing football again and I can be my real self. It's just to me it's another spark that lights the fire here for us.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott with us here on WGR. On to expectations. Like, it's another year where it's that final little bit, right, over the finish line. You're favored in every game. I know that's looking way too far ahead, but it kind of drives home expectations are about as high as they could get. Right? Like,
is that a question or no, is that just, a statement?
It's kind of like a – well, I feel like last year there was a good opportunity to say people think we're in transition. Sometimes teams like to lean into people don't believe in us. Mm. And I guess the question is like, I think everybody believes in you. And is that more pressure? Is that welcomed pressure? Is that just put it aside because, you know, hey, it's August 6th.
No, I think in 2017 that team was defined by people don't believe in us. Taking a group of players that were maybe cast offs from other teams or maybe written off. They were Bills players but written off. And I think that team, I think anytime you have that, you can go on and do more than people expect. And going back to last year, that was a team that people did not expect us to win the division or go and win 13 or so games, being the AFC Championship game. I think that says a lot about our staff, number one, and how we develop, but also, what happens when you feel a part of something bigger. That said, I don't think you can live in this underdog mindset, even though, you know, chip on your shoulder, yes, but I don't think you can live in that world, especially when you become good. I think you have to have this internal belief that, yeah, we are good. We are legitimate. And we'll see where it goes. I think you have to, within that, also be consistent day to day. Knowing if we're favored and all that type of stuff is for the outsiders to look at. But at the end of the day, we know who we are. We know who we're trying to become. And, it's going to be a journey. There's going to be some highs. There's going to be some lows.
One more thing about this season, the closing of Highmark. It's the final season in Highmark Stadium. Is that something you feel, a privilege to close it out this year? Do you impart that upon the players? Like, this year is – it's a big year. It always is a big year. But, you know, shutting down this building in style.
It's a responsibility is how I look at it. For all those that have come before us, all the great memories that have been had in that stadium, a lot of them before we arrived here in 2017, certainly a ton since we've gotten here since 2017 and up till now. It'll be emotional for all of us. Every time we take the field, including this weekend, we're creating some final memories and putting our own autograph on it. And, it is I look at it as a responsibility. I really do. And, we're getting to the end of this thing. And there's a lot of people who have been with the Bills a lot longer than I've been there and we've been there. And to see them talk about and hear them talk about Highmark Stadium, it's emotional for me. Mm-hmm. And I know I've seen it being emotional for them.
I'm sure Marv's maybe given you some stories over the years about it.
Of course. And I grew up, too, in an era where I was watching the Bills in the early 90s.
Right.
So a lot of those great moments I was witnessing on television, watching it, and to be able to be a piece of it. You know, too, that's another piece. You know, I'm a piece of history. We're a piece of history with this stadium in the last year.
Excited for the season. Sean McDermott, Bills head coach. Thanks for taking the time to join us, and best of luck this year.
Thanks, guys. Great to be with you.
We'll get a break in. Jeremy and Joe live from St. John Fisher here on WGR.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Welcome to the hotel.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Check-in time is now, check-out time is never.
It's Mike Shope.
Does my room have cable?
No. And the sheets are made of fire.
Can I change rooms?
Sorry, we're all booked up. Hell convention in town.
And the Bulldog.
Can I have a late checkout?
I'll have to talk to the manager.
You're not the manager, even in your own fantasy?
I'm the owner, the co-owner, with Satan.
It's Mike Shope.
Okay, just so I understand it, in your wildest fantasy, you are in hell, and you are co-running a bed and breakfast with the devil.
And the Bulldog.
Yeah, but I haven't told you my salary yet.
Go.
$80,000. $5 a year.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Want to give it up for our dude Zach Jones in there on the updates today. He's 4 for 4 so far. He's got two more to go on getting through that Matthew Stafford aggravated disc story unscathed. I totally jinxed it. I hope I'm not, you know, doing the no-hitter thing or the shutout thing, but I just props. I mean, it's a minefield out there, and you are so far effortlessly, or so it seems, navigating said minefield. Joining us right now on the West Hur Hotline is our buddy Mike Tenier, NFL writer, editor, founder of Two Deep Zone. Mike, how are things, man? It's nice to talk to you.
It's nice to talk to you. You know, the veteran move is just to refer to it as a back injury.
Yeah, that is always a way to do it. But this guy, I mean, he's the road less traveled. That is what Zach Jones is all about. That's his brand. Before we get into this, I want to make sure my buddy Nate Geary was in with me yesterday and is going to be here tomorrow while Mike's on vacation. But he had some golf thing he had to do today, so he couldn't be here. But he wanted me to tell you hello. He felt like you're one of like the OG Saturday Sports Talk Saturday guests.
I miss Nate, but it is very much on brand for him to be golfing at the start of football season, at the height of camp, at the height of the preseason, to have a golf emergency.
And with Hard Knocks debuting last night, Mike. I mean, the audacity of this guy to skip work today. Are you a Hard Knocks? I'm sorry, what? I missed it.
Best hour of sleep I ever had.
Oh, right. Okay. So yeah, no, you're not here. Did you like it before it became as sanitized as it seems to be now, or has it never really been much appeal to it for you?
No, it never had much appeal. Before it was sanitized, it still felt like it was 90% scripted, and the entire 10% of people actually spilling tea in front of the cameras would made it in there. And now the 10% is gone, and the whole thing is scripted. And all I know for sure is that I don't want to go driving with Deion Dawkins. Other than that, I don't think I'm going to learn anything about the Bills. I'll say this, though. Boring is good. Boring in July
yes.
is good for a football team. The Browns and the Giants were interesting. Think about it.
Right. No, there's no doubt. I've gotten a lot of that today because I've been saying, like, this might as well be, like, you know, the Bills, all these teams have their own, you know, video and digital arms, and the Bills and Sabres are owned by the same company, and they produce a lot of content that is like, right. oh, behind the scenes at the draft, like, here's how free agency went down and that kind of right. stuff. And I enjoy that as a fan for sure, but yesterday's debut of Hard Knocks felt almost entirely like it could have been produced by the Bills themselves.
It sounds like Josh Allen had like a screenwriter writing some of his stuff for him. It's a little bit ridiculous. Again, and a lot of times when these guys are just kind of like dedicated to their work kind of guys, you're not going to get an interesting storyline out of them. I would rather if they just had Josh Allen sit there and they showed him a couple of plays from last year and said, just explain the play to us. That would be fine.
Right.
And I'm not talking about like the interception or, you know, throwing the ball away or whatever. His touchdowns or just some random plays. Explain football to us. I would prefer that than to try to be following these guys around and seeing how they pack for work and some of the other behind-the-scenes stuff they try to hit us with.
Yeah, well, you're so boring, Mike. That's, of course, what you, of course that's what you would like. Well, the thing is, I mean, and I've gotten a lot of that, boring is good. And look, I don't disagree. Like, I want the Bills to be successful, and the less drama they have, the better. But it's not like they're without anything. I mean, they showed footage from a Friday evening practice at the stadium last Friday, where their leading pass catcher by a lot last year suffered a high ankle sprain and is now out week to week. That didn't get mentioned in this episode, nor did anything about James Cook being dissatisfied with his contract. Now, the hold in began maybe on a timeline where it might have been tough for them to squeeze that in because that just started on Sunday. So I can understand that. So we'll see what the future episodes bring, but the Bills aren't totally drama free either.
Absolutely not. And I think both might have been on a pretty tight timeline to turn things around. You'll probably see both of those in the next one. And, you know, a hold in is somewhat interesting. Injuries, obviously, this is important, but when you're trying to do television drama, It's like, well, he's hurt, and he's week to week. And
right.
then,
that's
and
it.
Kind of
right.
the story.
Yep.
It's not like people are going to be like having knockdown, drag out arguments or fun stuff like that for television producers.
Right, of course. So what's your takeaway on the Cook situation so far? We saw Kyren Williams get a contract this week from the Rams. That's a player that's on the field almost 90% of the snaps for the Rams through the last couple of seasons. And in the case of James Cook, who wants to be paid, you know, closer to the top of the market right here, $15 million. Has been a number that has been put out there by him and his camp. He's 47% of snaps. They don't trust him to block on third downs. They've got a third down back. They've got a 1B, if you will, in Ray Davis, and I think they like the timeshare. So what do you think about Cook and like what should be the outcome here?
He's not going to get top money. You know, the Bills are very careful. They're paying a lot of people a lot of money. They can't kind of be foolish with contracts. He's not Saquon. He's not Christian McCaffrey. He's not Derrick Henry. I don't think anybody, except possibly he himself, thinks he's in that category. I haven't looked at the Kyren Williams contract. I was looking at things like Chuba Hubbard's contract and Ramondre Stevenson and some of the other guys. That's where Cook probably should be slated. I think he is a valuable player. I think this ends probably sometime in the next week or so. It might end after Ray Davis or Darrytown Evans or somebody like that breaks off a decent run in the preseason game. But it's not going to end with him getting what he wanted. And I guess the one saving grace of this is when you're holding in, you're unlikely to get injured. So when he does sign on and works out a little bit and loosens up, he'll be ready to play, unlike some of the guys who are out there, not just Shakir, but other ones who have been struggling with injuries over the last week.
Right. The Kyren Williams contract, by the way, 3 years, $33 million, 23 guaranteed.
Those numbers.
You know, I'm not eager to do, frankly, this whole time, Mike. My approach has been, look, as mean as it is, like I like James Cook. I recognize his value. Like the Bills do not have very many, if any, other than him, explosive playmakers, really. They're not a fast team, skill player-wise. We'll see what, you know, Elijah Moore, if he makes the team, does, or if Curtis Samuel's healthy, if that can change. Josh Palmer's a good separator. So they've got some new contributors in the pass-catching department, but Cook gave them explosive plays. He was running away from DBs last year on long runs, and that was like a new facet of his game. So there is value there, but I'd be inclined to just play out the year, and like I wouldn't want to give him the Kyren Williams contract. I recognize that might be a good compromise, and I wouldn't be kicking and screaming about it. But I don't need them to do anything. I would be fine letting him go to market next spring.
Yeah, something that sounds like $333 million. That sounds like a normal contract for James Cook. Some of the other ones that I mentioned are in that range. It's kind of like when you reach the point of what Saquon, it's really Saquon, Henry, and McCaffrey are making. They're making it for a body of work. That's pretty obvious that they're making it for the fact that they've proven that they can be bell cows for multiple years, that they can do things like come back from an injury, that they can elevate this team to deep playoff runs, which in Cook's case, he came in when they were already a deep playoff run team. That's what that premium money is for, because there's always risk with paying a running back, and those guys said, we are worth the risk. James Cook has not had the kind of season yet in his career where he says, well, this is it. I'm worth the risk, where if I have an injury and I'm playing next year for this much money, it was worth the chance that would happen.
Mike Tenier, NFL writer, editor, founder of Two Deep Zone. You've also enjoyed his work with Football Outsiders and, as he says in his ex-bio, and other ancient empires, which is one of my favorite ex-bios that I've ever seen. The overall on the Bills, I mean, it's a pretty familiar spot there. And Mike, they're one of the top favorites for the Super Bowl. Again, they've got the reigning MVP on their team. They're still banging the everybody eats mantra when it comes to pass catchers. The offensive line looks like a strength again, together, entirely for two seasons running now. Knock on something wooden here to hope that continues. What do you think about the overall with the Bills? Do they look like same as it ever was here?
Same as it ever was, possibly even an easier division. According to the DVOA analysis, one of the easiest schedules in the NFL. I look at the obvious opener with the Ravens. After that, there's a chance of going 5-0 before their bye without breaking a sweat. So maybe they're 6-0 or 5-1 as Halloween approaches. And it's almost like there's nothing to talk about until mid-January for this team. I mean, and fans there, you're going to see these wins every week, and probably a lot of fans there are going to say, okay, you know, we beat the Saints 31-0. What does that mean for the AFC Championship game? Right. Like, that's kind of how you're going to be looking at this. That's how I'm going to be looking at it as an outsider. So, you know, if you want to talk about home field advantage through the playoffs, they're the team that has the best chance to do that because they should go 6-0 in division, et cetera. And then if you say, well, how do they stack up against the Ravens and the Chiefs? I take a deep breath and I say, well, those are the three teams, aren't they? We're going to have to see as the season unfolds.
Yeah. I don't have a name for this, but my regular partner here, Mike Shope, will reference someone. I don't know if it was a listener or an email or someone on social media said something to the effect, or maybe it said another member of the media that I just don't remember. But anyway, I can't wait until the Bills beat the Chiefs again in the regular season and I feel nothing.
Excellence fatigue. Excellence fatigue. Right. Your team is so good most of the time that they can do nothing to convince you and make you feel like they've gotten over any hump until they hit that final hurdle that is months away.
We do have a sort of a I don't know, overhaul might be a little strong, but they did go to work on the defense here, yeah. Mike. There's a lot of new parts on the defensive line. You know, the secondary, you know, Tre'Davious White is back, and that seems to be going really well so far. He's yeah. healthier than he's been in a long time after suffering two devastating season-ending injuries here in pretty short order before going on last year to be with the Rams and the Baltimore Ravens eventually. But up front, I mean, it's Larry Ogunjobi, and there's two draft pick defensive tackles. There's a third round pick from last year, Dwayne Carter, who I'm trying to figure out. He's got a pickup truck painted like in Bills colors. I'm trying to figure out how he's going to make the team with all the guys in front of him. You've got Joey Bosa, Michael Hoyt. He and Ogunjobi are going to miss six games with suspensions, but still, they really did go to work. How much time have you spent thinking about how different they may be up front?
It is. I am intrigued by that defensive line. I think you answered your question on how Walker makes the team. He's got 6 weeks early on to kind of prove himself when other guys are suspended. And he's kind of a uniquely built individual where if they can tap his potential.
Yeah, no, not Walker. I was talking about Dwayne Carter was a third-round pick last year at defensive tackle. Walker, yeah, is this year, he's the behemoth. Yeah, he's a part of the problem for Carter is what I'm thinking. Okay. But anyway.
Okay, and then you bring in Bosa again. He probably has a little more left in the tank than Miller did in and out of injuries. I look at it and I want to see it in the preseason because I can see depth in the preseason. That's the one thing I can say. And I just wonder as I look at that and the secondary, how much more optimization you can do on the defense. And again, the Bills, credit to the Bills in terms of sustaining the Super Bowl window. They've done everything you can expect a team to do and more. A weaker organization would be falling apart because of salary cap issues, et cetera. They've been clever with extensions. They've kind of let some guys go maybe a year too early, but then a year too late, and they've played the succession game very well. So when you start talking about T.J. Sanders and Landon Jackson and Deion Walker and Ogunjobi and some of these guys, I say, this is a team that does the succession game very well. They do next man up very well in October and November. That's only going to help them, but I just don't know what the level of help I'd need to see is before I can say, oh, well, that's going to be the missing link that's going to beat the Chiefs in a playoff game.
Right. It would really help if they could find one, if one of these guys who you mentioned can find a way to get in Patrick Mahomes' face in a playoff game. Like they have been lacking that. They got Von Miller to do that, and he did it in a regular season game, made big plays in the fourth quarter of a regular season win there. But by the time the playoffs came around, he was injured, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, and the Eagles were able to do it in the Super Bowl by going like 7 or 8 deep with the different guys pass rushing, but also being able to just shut everything down in their secondary with that Vic Fangio-type shell. And maybe it is. Maybe if Hairston can get healthy, et cetera, and White and some of these other guys help Benford out, they can have what they need on the back end to kind of exert their will on the front end.
How about on the other side here? I already mentioned Everybody Eats. We talked about James Cook in the running game. But they did add Josh Palmer. We'll see about Elijah Moore and Curtis Samuel. They feel kind of like one or the other to me, but I don't have to be right about that. Samuel is already missing time with an injury. Moore has been someone who I know the fantasy community has been fawning over for years. Just get him a good quarterback. So maybe he's someone who can show up and sort of surprise – How about Palmer, first of all, maybe most prominently, because I think he's someone, I mean, they're not paying him a ridiculous salary, but he's the highest paid receiver. No, actually, Shakir is with the extension, but they did go into free agency to bring Palmer here. He's got one 70-catch year with the Chargers, and then the rest is kind of pretty pedestrian. What do you think about him as an addition here?
Yeah, he's one of those guys. I mean, he's a big body possession guy. I think he catches what's thrown to him. I don't think he's a great, great separator, but, you know, he wins physical mismatches. I keep going back to the last 3 years of, you know, Justin Herbert doesn't have the weapons. Justin Herbert doesn't have the weapons. Well, Palmer was one of the non-weapons.
Right.
You know, he was a guy, and you can argue, well, you know, he should be the number three wideout, but, like, he was being used as a number two, number one. There's a chance he's a number two wideout here if Shakir's healthy. It's interesting because he and Keon Coleman have similar traits. You mentioned Elijah Moore and Curtis Samuel being the same guy. They are. They're the same guy. And maybe if one of them is healthy at any given time, that's a win. I look at the back of the lineup, and LaVisca Chenault and K.J. Hamler, they're kind of the same guy because they're like sort of this injury case, slot speedster, skinny fella here. They've got to kind of put this together in a way that makes sense. Obviously, you got Cook. You've got these tight ends. I don't see the number one, and I guess the thing I do want to see right now is health. I don't know who's going to be healthy week one. I need to see Shakir because I kind of know what he is, and he can say, well, he can do like an Amon-Ra St. Brown type of thing the way he does and open things up, and then maybe you guys get some production out of these new faces.
Let's mention Dalton Kincaid here. It was said to me earlier by our beat guy, Sal Capaccio, that he had a very good day of practice today. Very tough second year injury problems. I think hopefully largely the cause. I say hopefully because you'd want there to be that as an explanation. The problem with that is it something that is going to linger? He did miss one day of practice already with knee soreness. So like I'm watching that very closely. But that's a player I thought, Mike, off the rookie year was showing a lot of promise, and then last year happened, and now maybe the shine is off. I feel like this is a big, big year for him.
Yeah, and I'm just double checking on him. And what's troubling is before the injuries, he wasn't this factor. You know, it was September. He was relatively healthy. One catch, three catch games, etc. So much of, I think, what Joe Brady wants to do, I think so much of what's within Josh Allen's comfort zone is you can run this two tight end base attack, and you have the opportunity to do power and speed, because Kincaid should be able to do both things. Knox can also stretch a little bit. You can run, you can throw. Josh Allen can run options. You can call plays at the line like RPOs because you're not in the spread formation situation. That's what they want. I think they want Kincaid to be the elite player. I think they drafted him to be a tight end receiver hybrid, to be the big possession guy. And, you know, I haven't seen him. I don't know what his health status is, but that's another key because it's like, well, he regains form, then you don't worry so much about, you know, what's Curtis Samuel going to bring to the table because he gets relegated to more of a role player status.
Mike Tenier of Two Deep Zone on the Western Hotline for just another couple of minutes here. You mentioned it already. The division looks like a pretty cozy ride. If there's a team that I should be looking over my shoulder at amongst the Dolphins, Jets, and Patriots, who do you think it should be?
It's the Patriots, and it's like way over the shoulder. It's the Patriots in terms of, you know, you could end up with the season split or something like that with this team, as they made a lot of additions both through the draft and on free agency. I'm going to not name them all because there's 137 guys they added. But Drake May definitely demonstrated some potential to be a franchise-level quarterback. And I don't even know if you guys saw him last year because you saw Milton in the finale. So those are your worries there. I think that the Jets are really almost like taking their gap year right now to find themselves with Justin Fields. And the Dolphins are literally having some sort of like emotional nervous breakdown as we speak. Day by day, the news, the quotes out of there become more dire. I don't think Mike McDaniel lasts the season as their head coach. And I'm starting to wonder if he's going to last September as their head coach, the way that the news is going out of there.
I'm with you on Miami. I just think it seems like it's reached a conclusion here. Like we talked a lot at this time last year about the Bills window. Man, I think the Miami, there's plywood over the window. I think it's this point with Miami is how I feel. I love it. The Jets are backpacking across Europe, is what you're telling me.
Yes, yes, yes. That's it.
All right,
and they're shuttering up the windows in Miami.
What do you think about the Chiefs real quick before you go? Because I'm sort of bracing for – I know there'll be – there's always health, right? And there's Rashee Rice suspension perhaps incoming at some point here. But all the talk about Mahomes and the explosive plays going away and their passing offense just being very pedestrian now, I don't know. I'm sort of bracing for like a 5,000-yard, 45-touchdown Mahomes season incoming.
That might be your Bills anxiety talking to him.
Yeah, for sure.
The Chiefs are the Chiefs. And both in my gut and as I look at the projections, DVOA projections from FTN Almanac, I see the Ravens and the Bills kind of neck and neck for the top projection, and then the Chiefs a clear tier below them. And there's a team that has a bunch of new faces on the offensive line, possibly a rookie left tackle in Josh Simmons that they're trying to work in. Their team is up against the cap to a degree. They've got some new faces all over the place. And their playmaker core isn't really set either. The one thing I'll say about them is that when they go out and they draft these guys like Rice and Worthy and Jalen Royals, they're always drafting like the fastest dude. They're often always drafting like the fastest dude where you look at them and say, oh my gosh, between catching bombs and catching screen and go and catching end arounds, this guy's going to be touchdowns. And that's the thing you worry about. And I look at the Bills, they always seem to be going after like the biggest, sturdiest dude. And sometimes I think, guys, maybe try the fastest dude just once and see if that helps you guys do what those guys are doing every
year. Well, you're preaching to the choir here. The Xavier Worthy trade made me insane, Mike. Absolutely. That was my guy in that draft. Like, not only are you not taking him, you're trading out of the spot and letting Kansas City take him. And I mean, oh, my God. All right. We got to go. Mike, thank you so much for the time. Always enjoy it. And I'm sure we'll catch up once the season gets rolling.
You got it. Take care and be careful when you're talking about Matthew Stafford's back injury.
Yes, indeed. Mike Tenier, NFL writer, editor, founder of Two Deep Zone, formerly with Football Outsiders, and our buddy Aaron Schatz over there. And he's still contributing to Aaron's venture, the Almanac and FTN and all that. So good dude, that Mike Tenier. All right, I got to hit up a timeout. I'm the Bulldog. Mike is away this week. Thanks a lot for hanging with me here on a Wednesday. This is WGR.